morning.
Good morning.
Do you notice it? Can you tell? Love is in the air. Have you noticed that? No, it's not because it's February. No, it's not because a week from now is Valentine's Day. No, it's not because you can't go to Walmart or the grocery store and not see candy or flowers or hearts to buy. No, love is in the air because we're together as Christians. See, Christians are to be a people of love. And I hope that when we meet together, that you know and notice a difference. The Bible teaches a lot about Christians having love. In fact, we're told to have love for lots of things and for lots of people. We're told to love the church. In John, the 13th chapter, verse 35. In fact, this is probably a topic that we could address all by itself. This is the defining factor that distinguishes the church from others. Here Jesus says, "By this all will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another." Our love for the church is the thing that people should see, that they look at and say, there's something different about that person. That's the thing that people will know, that we are followers of Christ. But Christians are to have love for the church. John chapter 15, Jesus in verses 12 and 13 says, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends." We're to love the church. We're to love the brotherhood. We're also to love our own family. We could look at a number of passages, just a couple. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25, Paul says, "Husbands, what are you to do? Love your wife." And how are you to do that? "Just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. Of course, we find in Titus chapter 2 that the opposite is true. That the older women are to teach the younger women to do what? Well, Titus 2:4, that they admonish the younger women to love their husbands, to love their children. But we could look at other passages that talk about this same thing. But we as Christians are to love our spouse. We're to love our children. We're to love our family. Something that makes us maybe different as well from the rest of the world is that we're commanded to love our enemies. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 43 and 44, Jesus says, "You have heard it said that you shall love your enemy, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you." See, we're supposed to also love those who don't love us. We're supposed to love our enemies. But Jesus sums up the kind of love that Christians should have by answering a question that a lawyer poses to him. In Matthew chapter 22, we find this exchange talking about, how we'll relate it to the love that Christians should have. In Matthew chapter 22, beginning in verse 34, "But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together." I find this interesting. You know, these rival groups, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. The Pharisees see, Jesus shut down the Sadducees, so let's see if we can silence him. Then we'll one up the Sadducees. But verse 35, "Then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him, and saying, 'Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?'" I suppose he was expecting Jesus to answer, "Well, you know, it's commandment number one or commandment eight." But that's not how Jesus answered. Verse 37, Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." So Jesus answers his question in two ways. He says, the greatest commandment, the first and greatest commandment, is to love God with everything. And so we as Christians should love God with our whole being. Jesus calls this the first and great commandment, and why not? Right? God has made us. In Acts chapter 17, verse 28, Paul says that for in Him, meaning God, in Him we live and move and have our being. God not only made us, but it's because of God that we exist. So we should indeed love God with everything we have. It's easy for us to love someone who has done so much for us. Now, we could spend an entire lesson discussing what it means to love God and how God requires us to show our love, but that's not what I want to speak about this morning. Our focus this morning will be on the second thing that Jesus says, on having love for our neighbors. Because I think that we can easily see how we can love God. He's done so much for us, but what have our neighbors done for us that we should love them? So this morning our focus will be on having love for our neighbors. And we'll really try to address a couple of things. Why is this important? Who is our neighbor? And how do we love our neighbors? So let's first address that first question. Why is it important for us to have love for our neighbors? In the passage we just read, Matthew chapter 22, verses 35 through 40, Jesus reveals that this is the second great commandment of the law, that we should love our neighbors. He calls the love of our neighbors the second greatest commandment, that this, along with the love for God, form the foundation for all of God's commandments. If you think about it, that's so true, isn't it? That if we look at the commandments of the Old Testament, really, if we could categorize them, one could fall towards either the love of God, or one could fall towards the love of our neighbor. Consider what's said in Romans, the 13th chapter, verses 8 through 10. Owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, are all summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law. Just think about that in trying to answer this question of why is it important that we love our neighbors? Well, if you were to take the entire law of the Old Testament and sum it up into two things, which Jesus did, it would be love God and love your neighbor as yourself. When you look at the Ten Commandments, I find it interesting after having looked at this that God even gave Ten Commandments. Why not just give two commandments? Well, there were some things that God needed to specify, but Jesus sums it up in two commandments, love God, love your neighbor. When you look at the Ten Commandments, the first four, what do they deal with? They deal with that first thing, of love of God. Don't have any other gods before Him. Don't have any graven images. Don't take the Lord's name in vain. Those are things that directly relate to our love for God. What do the last six deal with? Well, the last six deal with how we interact with other people. And very much how much we love other people. Paul here in Romans, he quotes some of those. You shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, not bear false witness, not covet. All of these things lead to this one law, which is you should love your neighbor as yourself. What does Paul say there in verse 8? You owe no one anything except to love them, for he who loves another has done what? Has fulfilled the law. Verse 10, love does no harm to his neighbor, therefore love is what? The fulfillment of the law. Paul says it twice here. The importance of loving our neighbor is because love is the fulfillment of the law. Jesus and Paul are essentially making the same point. That is, the laws of the Old Testament that tell you how to interact with other people could simply be stated, love your neighbor. Paul even says so much. In Galatians chapter 5, verses 13 through 15, this is what Paul says. For you, brethren, have been called to liberty. Do not use liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, and even this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And if you bite and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by one another. Paul just makes it very clear what he and Jesus had been saying previously, that our interactions with other people and how we are to deal with them can be summed up in this: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. James takes it a little bit further. Remember, Jesus says that there are two commandments, right? They asked, what's the most important commandment? Jesus says, well, the first and greatest commandment is that you love the Lord your God with everything that you have. Now, James, in talking about this love of your neighbor, goes so far to call this the royal law. In James chapter 2, verses 8 through 9, he has this to say: if you really fulfill the royal law according to the scriptures, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you do well. But if you show partiality, you commit sin and are convicted by the law as a transgressor. Now, James' point here is to say that you should treat most people equally. You should not show partiality. When you do that, you commit sin. But what does he say of you shall love your neighbor as yourself? He calls this the royal law. I find that very interesting that James here adds that idea of that this is important. It's the royal law. And so this commandment is so important to us to understand. Commandment is important. We must understand how to make application of it. What does it really mean? Well, let's first address this question of who is your neighbor. For me, it's easy. I got Eric and Amanda. They're easy to love. They're your friend. They're my family. That's not what this is talking about, is it? It's very interesting that this question, who is your neighbor, is one of the questions that Jesus answers for us. Now, we don't have a ton of these where we might ask the same question today. Well, who is your neighbor? And Jesus answers that very question because that question was asked directly of him. If you remember, it's found in Luke chapter 10. And I want to read this to you. It's a parable that Jesus uses. I want to read it because I think it helps us to understand who our neighbor is. And behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tested him. There's something about lawyers and testing Jesus. Saying to him, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" He said to him, "What is written in the law? What is your reading of it?" So he answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." So this lawyer probably was there when Jesus answered the question of the other lawyer about what are the greatest commandments, because what does he do? He answers Jesus' question to him in the way that he had answered a previous question. Let's continue on. And he said to him, "You have answered rightly. Do this and you will live." But he said, wanting to justify himself, said to Jesus, "Who is my neighbor?" Then Jesus answered and said, "A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, and he set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. On the next day, when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, 'Take care of him. Whatever more you spend, when I come again, I will repay you.' So which of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among thieves?" And he said, "Him who showed mercy on him." Then Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." So Jesus answers this question to us, not really directly, but he does answer the question. The lawyer had heard what Jesus had said before about the law, that the law is really summed up in two things: love God and love your neighbor. Well, now he wanted to know, well, who is my neighbor? Because really what he wanted to know is, do I only have to be nice to Eric and Amanda, or do I have to be nice to other people? That was really the question the lawyer wanted to know. And so Jesus gives him this story of three people who see a man in need, two of whom do nothing, and one does something. So who was it who was his neighbor, the one who showed mercy on him. You see, our neighbor is the people who we have opportunity to show compassion to. The people who you and I come in contact with, whether they're the person that lives next door to you, or whether they're the person who you happen to pass by on your way to some other place. Just like this man was traveling on the way to Jericho. So the reality is our neighbor is anyone who we might come in contact with. So how do we love these people? How do we love our neighbors? Well, the good news is that the commandment that Jesus gives tells us exactly how we should love our neighbors. And that is, we should love our neighbors as yourself. Well, what does that mean? What does it mean that we should love our neighbors as ourselves? Well, it's the golden rule, isn't it? Right? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's what we teach our kids. Well, I can tell you that we have this conversation at our house with some regularity. Well, if you want to be treated this way, you need to treat your sister this way. Or if you don't want to be treated that way, don't treat your sister that way. Now, that's not how the Bible describes it. The Bible doesn't call it the golden rule. The Bible doesn't say, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But Jesus is the source of this golden rule. In Matthew chapter 7, verse 12, this is what we're told. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Now, isn't that interesting? Jesus basically says the same thing that we call the golden rule. Whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. But then what does he say? For this is the law and the prophets. The law, the prophets, the teaching of the Old Testament can be summed up by, if you want people to treat you a certain way, you treat them that way. You know, that sounds an awful lot like love your neighbor as yourself. And isn't it interesting that Jesus says that the love of God and the love of your neighbor in totality describe the law and the prophets? Practically speaking, we need to see ourselves in our neighbors. That's what it means to love your neighbor as yourself. When you see your neighbor, you should put yourself in their shoes. If you were to find yourself in that situation that your neighbor is in, what would you want to happen to you? The Levite and the priest, as they passed the man who had been beaten and stripped naked and left for dead, they didn't do that, did they? They were only thinking of themselves in a selfish way. I don't have time to stop and help this person, or that is, you know, I don't know, I'm not, just not the right person. The Samaritan, what did he do? He had compassion. He put himself in the situation that the man who had been beaten was in. If I was in that situation, what would I want? Well, I would want someone to stop and help me. Jesus, in answering the question of the lawyer, he doesn't go to the Ten Commandments. Instead, he goes to Deuteronomy to answer that you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And then he goes to Leviticus to say that you should love your neighbor as yourself. In Leviticus chapter 19, I want to read from this passage because it gives the children of Israel some practical examples of what it means to love your neighbor, some things that they were commanded to do. So we're going to look at Leviticus chapter 19. We'll look at verses 9 through 18. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings from your harvest. You shall not glean your vineyards, nor shall you gather every grape from your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God. You shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another. You shall not swear by my name falsely. You shall not profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. You shall not cheat your neighbor, nor rob him. The wages of him who is hired shall not remain with you all night until morning. You shall not curse the deaf, nor put a stumbling block before the blind, but shall fear the Lord fear your God. I am the Lord. You shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. In righteousness you shall judge your neighbor. You shall not go about as the talebearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke your neighbor and not bear sin because of him. You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Many of those examples that are in Leviticus for the children of Israel to look to are things that we can look back to in the Ten Commandments and see a parallel. But the very first one is of interest to me. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners. Apparently, you weren't supposed to reap everything. You weren't supposed to pluck every grape. You weren't supposed to cut down all of the grapes. You were supposed to leave things for those who had need. You were to help those who needed help. Now, we see an example of this in the later on, don't we? We see Ruth going into the field and gathering up the gleanings. She was a person who was of need. All of this is said to love your neighbor as yourself. If you were in a position of need, what would you want your neighbors to do for you? In Matthew chapter 25, verse 34 through 40, we find this said of those who are the sheep, those who are on the right-hand side of God. Then the king will say to those on his right side, "Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Then the righteous will say to him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?" And the king will say to them, "Assuredly, I say to you, as much as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me." Two wonderful passages for us to look at to find a practical application for how we should treat our neighbors. When we see a need, we address it. We take care of it. In this case, Jesus is talking about those who are hungry or naked or a stranger or in prison, that we take care of the need that they have. Now, a lot of this has physical applications, but let's make a spiritual application as well. The neighbor who is lost in sin and needs the gospel, we were once there too, weren't we? And so when we find our neighbor in a life of sin, we should have compassion on them. In Titus chapter 3, verses 3 through 5, Paul says this to Titus, "For we ourselves were also once foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving various lusts and pleasures, living in malice and envy, hateful and hating one another. But when the kindness and the love of God, our Savior, towards man appeared, not by the work of righteousness which we have done, but according to His mercy, He saved us through the washing of regeneration and the renewing of the Holy Spirit." You see, we need to see ourselves in our lost neighbor who is trying to find happiness in the things of the world but is enslaved to various lusts. Because there was a time in our life when we were there too. So when we see our neighbor and see them lost in sin, we should do like Jesus and have compassion on them. We need to reason with our neighbor as we would reason with ourselves. What would convince us? What would prick our hearts? What would convince them? What would convince their heart? What, in a spiritual sense, what do they have need of? In order to do this, we must know our neighbor. We need to be involved in the lives of others and be willing to serve them. And this is becoming increasingly difficult in our society, isn't it? We are very much isolating ourselves from one another. There was a time when you needed your neighbors. We need our neighbors. It's nice to have Eric and Amanda right next door. I can't tell you how many times we've sent Paige and Reese running over to get sugar or syrup or something else that we just didn't happen to have. And there was a time where that was very common. Just send, go over, ask the neighbors if they have something. I can remember when Emily and I were first married, walking over and knocking on our neighbor's door and saying, "Do you have an egg we can borrow?" There was a time when the community needed one another, and our community is moving away from that. as neighbors, we're isolating ourselves. And so, you know, if you went and just stirred up a conversation, we had this happen to us yesterday. Emily and I were out with Paige and Reese at a restaurant. We'd sit down to eat, and an older couple came over and just said a few things to us, just talked with us briefly. And I think Paige and Reese were a little surprised by that, because that's the world that we live in. We live in a world that is increasingly isolating itself from each other. And so this knowing our neighbor becomes very difficult. We have to make a conscious effort to be involved in the lives of those people who are around us. And this is probably a topic in and of itself to address at a later time. But let's look at some other practical things we can do to love our neighbor. Remember Romans chapter 13, verses 1 through 8. Owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, are all summed up in this, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law. So, how is it that we can love our neighbor? Well, don't sin against your neighbor. That was the point of what Paul is saying here in Romans chapter 13. Don't sin against your neighbor. Loving your neighbor means that you don't put a stumbling block in front of them. The only one of the last six Ten Commandments that is not directly related to us sinning against our neighbor is to honor your father and mother. But all of the others say the very same thing that Romans 13 is saying. Don't sin against your neighbor. Don't steal something from them. Don't commit adultery. Don't bear false witness against them. Don't sin against your neighbor. Instead, what should we do? We should do good to them. Galatians chapter 6, verse 10, therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially those who are of the household of faith. Now, we should do good to one another. All of us here, yes, we should certainly do good for Christians, but we're to do good to all. And so instead of sinning against our neighbor, we should do good to them. And even when it's not appreciated, Paul was doing good for the Corinthians, but he was not receiving appreciation in return. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 15, this is what Paul has to say to the Corinthians. And I will very gladly spend and be spent for your souls, though the more abundantly I love you, the less I am loved. You know, sometimes when we do good things for other people, we don't receive any kind of good things or love in return. That's not the reason we do them, right? We don't give so things can be given to us. Who are we supposed to give to? We're supposed to give to those who have no means by which to give back to us. Why? Because it's not the gift that we're getting that we're wanting. It's the gift that we're giving that we're wanting to give. So we're to do good to them even if it's not appreciated. And even if they are enemy. That's what Matthew chapter 5 says. You know, there apparently was a teaching amongst the Jews that Jesus kind of picks out here. Because there in Matthew chapter 5, he says, you have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Now, where did they hear that from? That didn't come from God. So here's this misinterpretation of the old law. You should love your enemy, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But Jesus says, but I say to you, love your enemy, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Why? That you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good and sends the rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore, you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. You see, we're supposed to love our neighbor in not just the neighbors who are nice to us. We're supposed to love our neighbors who are our enemies. We're supposed to love those who are opposed to us. And why are we to do that? So that we can be perfect like God. Because God, it's just a wonderful example. We can look at John 3:16. God so loved the world that he did what? He sent his only son. The world. God so loved the people who loved him. No, God loved the world, even those who hated him. Think about Jesus. What did Jesus do for his neighbors? How did he love his neighbors? Well, rather than keeping a safe distance from the disreputable, Jesus moved towards them. He approached them. He pursued them. He engaged with them. He was like the Samaritan. Unfortunately, I think it's very easy for us to be like the Levite and the priest, to take a very different approach. What do we do when we see sinful people? I think sometimes we move as far away as possible, but not Jesus. That's not what he did. Remember the woman at the well? When Jesus goes and speaks with her, Jesus knew about her. He knew about her life. And in John 4:9, then the woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink of me, a Samaritan woman? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans." See, she even knew. Well, you Jews don't hang out with us. That's not how Jesus worked. Jesus spent time with a Samaritan. Think about Zacchaeus, right? Zacchaeus wants to see Jesus, climbs up in a tree. Jesus sees him in Luke 19:7, but when he saw it, he sees him and says, I'm going to go eat at your house. And other people saw this. Verse 7. When they saw it, they all complained, saying, "He is gone to be the guest with a man who is a sinner." You see, Jesus spent his time with those people who needed him at the expense of his reputation. Now imagine for a minute if, probably not be a good example for me, but let's say Emily wants to go and work with people who are working the strip club industry. Now, you probably wouldn't want me to go. It probably look very poorly, but maybe you should be that example. Maybe I go and want to preach to someone who is in that kind of an industry. A terrible industry. But there's people who are lost. Imagine that's what Jesus did here. That was the view you and I have of the people who are in that industry. That was the view of the tax collectors. That was the view of the publicans, of the Samaritans. Oh, these are the lowest form of life. But that's who Jesus was with. Now imagine if you saw me and Emily at one of those industries. What would you think? You might wonder. You might wonder. I think we're afraid sometimes of what damage will happen to our reputation. But Jesus didn't care about his reputation in that regard, did he? He didn't do much to manage it. In Luke chapter 5, verses 27 through 32, after these things he went out and saw a tax collector named Levi sitting at the tax office, and he said to him, "Follow me." And he rose, left all, and followed him. And Levi gave him a great feast in his own house, and there were a great number of tax collectors and others who sat down with him. So now you see this party, right? Matthew is going to be following Jesus. And what does he do? He throws this great feast and invites all of his friends, all of his tax collector friends. And so Jesus comes and goes to this feast, and the scribes and Pharisees see it. So let's look at verse 30. And their scribes and the Pharisees complained against his disciples, saying, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" Jesus answered and said to them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." Jesus went and spent time with the lowest of the low. And people noticed, and Jesus didn't care. Jesus said, "I didn't come to spend time with those who are saved. I came not to the righteous, but to the sinners." And finally, one other thing that Jesus did that we can learn from is that Jesus had pity on his neighbors. Jesus took pity on the people around him. When he fed the 5,000 in Matthew chapter 14, verse 14, he looks out and sees this great multitude of no place to go and no food. And what happens? He was moved with compassion. Matthew chapter 9, verses 35 through 38, talking about another situation. Then Jesus went about all the city and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitude, he was moved with compassion for them, because they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of the harvest to send out his laborers into the harvest. See, Jesus looked out and saw the people who were his neighbors, who were living lives of sin, and had compassion on them. And it resulted in him saying, the harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. I've taken more time than I intended. I wanted to talk a little bit about loving your neighbors. But none of that matters if you don't love God. Because remember what Jesus says, the first and greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. If you've not obeyed God, you're not loving God with all of your heart, soul, and mind. If you found yourself straying away from the path of right, or if you've never named Christ as your Savior, you have an opportunity to take care of those things. Be washed in baptism, if that's what you need, as we stand and sing our closing number.